I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour of the program, the African-American community as it grapples with the gay rights issue. Our guest is a documentary filmmaker, Yoruba Richin, and she has a new film, a documentary, The New Black, which premieres this Sunday on Independent Lens on PBS. The film takes us from church pews to streets to kitchen tables. It centers on the struggle over marriage equality in the state of Maryland. She says for 3 years, over 3 years, she followed how the issue was being debated and understood in the African-American community, and says that she came to realize the issue of gay rights in the black community is in many ways a fight over the African-American family, which has been a contested space since the time of slavery. And there's this story keeps moving so rapidly, we're going to ask her to comment on what's taking place in Wisconsin and, surprise of surprise, in places like Texas and Utah as well. Yoruba has directed and produced films in this country, Africa, South America, and Southeast Asia. Her film Promised Land premiered at the Full Frame Documentary Festival. She also has produced for the investigative unit of ABC News and the independent news program Democracy Now! She won a Fulbright in filmmaking and traveled to Salvador, Brazil, where she began production in Sisters of the Good Death, a documentary about the oldest African Women's Association in the Americas and the annual festival they hold celebrating the end of slavery. Yoruba, thank you very, very much for being with us. It's nice to have you here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And what great timing.
Yeah, isn't this amazing? Here we are in Wisconsin, too. I was listening to your TED Talk recently, and you had some very interesting things to say about how this issue is moving along so rapidly that perhaps people in the gay rights community have learned from the civil rights movement, have learned from the women's movement, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what I think is so fascinating being at this time in history is looking at how these, what I call freedom struggles, have learned from and taken from each other in order to advance, you know, to advance. And what that talk, that TED Talk that you mentioned looks at is how the African-American civil rights movement is really the foundation for freedom struggles in this country. And the LGBT movement was able to take some of those same tactics and strategies first laid down by the civil rights movement to make even quicker gains. I think that's part of why we're seeing these changes happen really sort of relatively quickly, especially when you compare it to the African-American civil rights movement.
Well, you start that TED Talk by going back to 2008, the night that Barack Obama was elected, and also the same night that you got Proposition 8, election returns were coming in. You were living in California. You are a woman of color who's lesbian, and you were happy, and then you were, oh my gosh, what's happened? What a night that must have been for you.
Absolutely. I was visiting in California that night. I was living in New York, but I had lived in California. And it was one of those nights where, as you just said, it was the euphoria of, my excitement over our first African-American president, Barack Obama, and then the great defeat of Proposition 8, which, outlawed the recently won right for California LGBT couples to marry. And what was even sort of more crazy is that pretty much immediately the narrative became that African-Americans were to blame for the passage of Proposition 8. And it became this, sort of media narrative that blacks were more homophobic than other groups. And now that civil rights had been won for us, we wanted to take away other people's rights. And there was, it was really sort of pitting the groups against each other. And, of course, within that, there was no voice from the black LGBT community. And that's really what got me started on this film and trying to find out why this was happening and what folks were doing to.
Oops, are you still there?
Oh. Yeah,
oh, okay. I'm sorry. Yeah, you just dropped out for a second. You ended with what folks were doing to
repair this relationship.
Right. So you go to Maryland, which has a fairly significantly high African-American population. I didn't know that. And you looked at how the church particularly is grappling with this issue and how young activists are grappling with this issue as well. So it is an issue in some conservative religious circles. And there were some people who were preaching, not just in African-American churches, certainly in other churches as well, about how sinful this behavior is and people feeling very uncomfortable who are African-American about coming out to their churches, to people in their community. And yet, at the kitchen table, when people are sitting around and you're filming them and they're talking about this issue, they seem pretty accepting of course I love her, of course I love him. Just don't like, you know, what they're doing here. I don't agree with this, but I really love this person.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think that reflects a lot of our conversations, not just in the Black community, but in this country as a whole. You know, the LGBT issue has really sort of bubbled to the top of the political agenda. It's forcing us all to have conversations and, you know, in our communities, in our churches, in our families, like that scene you just mentioned. And what I try to show is the way in which folks are grappling with it and, you know, different perspectives and different feelings about it. But, you know, ultimately, the LGBT community, we're in all kinds of communities. We're in Black communities and white communities and poor, rich. So this is something that really affects everybody. Mm-hmm. And they're, you know, these are our brothers and our sisters and our uncles and our cousins. And so it's about family as well.
The Maryland, this was 2012, so you were looking at a referendum because the legislature, correct, passed a question six legalizing same marriage. Many people got upset about it and said we need a referendum, so people were on the street trying to get people to understand this issue better. You know, that wasn't very long ago. It was 2 years ago. And when you look at where other states are now and what happened during that referendum where it was approved, right? I mean, it's just amazing what's going on in 2 years.
Well, what's fascinating is that, okay, so 2008 is when I conceived of the film, right? And then 2012, as you mentioned, was when the governor of Maryland signed 2008, that was really the second big referendum on this issue that had come into play. And, you know, during the filming and during the election battle, people didn't really know how it was going to turn out. Mm-hmm. So that night was, you know, quite an amazing night and became a historical night because it then became the first time gay marriage was voted on and passed by the voters. Mm-hmm. In 2012. And, of course, there are three other states that night that also passed pro-marriage equality votes as well. So that's 2012. And, yes, now to date, I can't even keep up with the number of how many states, you know, through the courts or through legislation has, you know, approved gay marriage.
Mm-hmm. And so when do we reach the point, it's much faster than we thought perhaps, when, as you say, state by state, the last vestiges of prejudice will fade, all of us were created equal, when do we reach that point? Pretty soon?
Well, let's hope. I mean, I think that, you know, it's also important to remember that gay marriage is not the end-all be-all for LGBT rights. And I think all my characters, you know, who worked on this issue in the film would say the same thing. There are many other battles to fight. There are many other, you know, issues that we have to contend with, employment discrimination, violence against the transgendered community, many different issues. But so I think this is the beginning of the process. But you know what? It's like the civil rights movement, too, the African-American civil rights movement. That's not over yet either. And we've been doing that for many years as well. So it's it's important to look at these movements as a process, as continuing.
Mm-hmm. When you say, I'm interested in further thoughts on this, you came to realize that the issue of gay rights in the Black community is in many ways a fight over the African-American family, which has been a contested space since the time of slavery. What do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean by that is I think we have to understand history to understand the present. And, you know, we were brought here as slaves. We were not permitted to have family legally, and our families were torn apart by slavery, and not just, you know, after slavery ended, by the Jim Crow system, by the economic exploitation that went on for many years. And we still look at sort of the reasons why the black family is in some ways a fragile union, the imprisonment that goes on, you know, of the male imprisonment that happens in our country that disproportionately affects black men. So this notion of family has always been something that, has been something for us that's been, as I say, a contested notion. And I think that, you know, there has been a desire because of these challenges to our family structure, there's been a desire in some parts of the African American community to only accept or to strive for a nuclear sort of, you know, husband wife family, because mm-hmm. that's what we were denied for so long. Mm-hmm. But I think what that doesn't look at is how we have always had alternative ways of having families, and how that actually strengthens our community if we strengthen those alternative ways of family.
Well, you look at what happened during slavery when parents were separated from each other. Mm-hmm. There had to be alternative ways. I mean, the history is horrendous, isn't it?
Exactly. Exactly. And you know what? I actually started to bring this to a broader look, because if you look at, it's not just the black community, even though that's the lens that I look at, but we all have different ways, have alternative family structure in every community. And I think legally that needs to be strengthened. Why is it that you have to be married, you know, in order to receive health benefits, for example, when there are, you know, many different people living together who don't necessarily want to get married, but have committed to each other or raising a family together, et cetera, et cetera. You know, we have a very limited notion in this country of what family is. And actually places like Europe are more advanced on this issue, because I don't think it actually reflects the reality of many of our lives here in this country.
Mm-hmm. Let's center on, forgive me, but I wasn't very familiar with his music, but my taste tends to go to 1940s, you know, even before my time. But this recording artist who was very open about the fact that he was a gay man, and people were, you know, well, are you going to renounce this? Are you going to get rid of this? And let's talk about how he was treated. Tonex, is that, was that
Tone.
His name? Tonex, sorry.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Tell me about Tone and his experience, and how Tone, he may have moved people along just for being very honest.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. Tone, I just think, is such a fascinating, interesting person and character in the film.
Yes.
He, you know, was someone who was big in the gospel industry. So he was sort of at the pinnacle of success in the gospel industry. And he, had won many awards. He toured all the time. He was also minister of his father's church. And he chose in a few years ago, in 2010, I believe, to actually be honest about who, you know, about his sexuality, and to come out. And he did it on a gospel show. You know, we show that clip in the film. And the consequences were the repercussions were quite intense. I mean, his career basically was over in that industry. And the other part about it is that he is such an amazing talent as well. It just goes to show what sort of homophobia within the church, within our communities, how it squashed this amazing talent, you know, because of the homophobia and prejudice that, you know, that exists. And but he has also become a real beacon for many people within the church, for many music artists, you know, especially within the gospel community, to, you know, be honest about who they are. And now remaking his career, he does a lot of producing, a lot of, you know, he puts out his album, and he goes by B. Slade So he has a new moniker.
Mm-hmm. And he's very talented. I guess it makes you realize the importance, if you're honest about who you are, that, you know, people may come along. And he wasn't making any apologies to anybody. The clip from that television show is quite remarkable on the film. We're going to welcome phone calls. Our guest this hour is Yoruba Richin, and she has she's a documentary filmmaker, and she has a film that will be on Independent Lens, PBS, on Sunday, this coming Sunday, 10:30 Eastern Time. Check your local listings on PBS, hosted by Stanley Tucci, that looks at, well, it looks at mostly the issue of gay rights, marriage equality in light of the same-sex marriage movement, and it concentrates on the state of Maryland, which has a large African-American population and was dealing with this question six, legalizing same-sex marriage. And she believes that it's an unfinished business of black people being free. The documentary is The New Black. It looks at how this issue is dealt with in the black church, at the coffee table in people's homes, on the streets. They interview some people just, you know, sitting on the stoops and talk to them. And look at activists, too, who were successful in getting people to the polls. And that proposition, question six, passed in Maryland in 2012. Since then, everything has been pretty rapid. So let's talk about how rapid everything has been, including in the state of Wisconsin. It's will be challenged, certainly, but marriage equality is happening all over the state. People are getting married in counties all over the state of Wisconsin, and one state after another is mostly through the courts because of the Supreme Court ruling about the Defense of Marriage Act, things are changing, and they're changing fast. She also says that this movement has learned a lot from the civil rights movement, and so that has sped along the process. What do you think? We'd like to hear from you. And here's how we can hear from you. Call us at 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Everything is open for you right now. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Here's our phone number. Join our conversation. Why do you think the movement, particularly for marriage equality, is just moving right along? Have people who have organized the movement learned from the civil rights movement, from the women's movement? What do you think about its rapidity, and what do you think about the goals? Is it going to have pushback somewhere or not? Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Yoruba Richin is our guest, a director, producer, and writer. She's done films all over the world and has also produced for the investigative unit of ABC News. Her film, The New Black, will open on will be on PBS on Sunday as part of the Independent Lens. Let's talk a little bit, Yoruba, about some of the people who are featured. The young woman who is just working tirelessly goes back to her foster mother and is worried that her foster mother will not accept her for being a lesbian, and it actually turns out to be a fine meeting, but she's just working tirelessly. And I think that you made the comment in the TED Talk about somebody who's that young who can present the issue in a way that older people may not be able to.
Absolutely. So Caress Taylor Hughes is the character's name, actress name. She's wonderful. And, you know, a few things about Caress. First of all, I do think that being younger, there is a way in which she could see the connection she understands the history of the civil rights movement, but she sees how it's connected to the LGBT movement and, you know, and is able to present that as a way in which to, you know, convince voters to vote for the marriage equality bill. She's also really, she's just a little update on what she's doing. She is now getting her master's.
Oh.
In sports management.
Really?
And yes, and she is taking the activism and the work that she, you know, has done since graduating from college, and she's bringing that to the sports arena, which is very interesting right now in terms of what's going on with, you know, all these so many athletes coming out and a real conversation in the sports community around sexuality. So she's just an amazing, amazing woman, and I'm so happy that, you know, she has been a part of the film and continues to be a part of the film.
Oh, it's so good to get an update on her, too. That's really amazing.
Yes.
That's great.
Yeah, totally.
So let's talk about the major events of both of these freedom movements and how the equality movement for gay people may have learned something from the civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, what I do in the talk, and folks, I encourage you to check out the talk if you're interested in this.
Yes, it's very good.
Thank you. But there are certain strategies that were laid down by the civil rights movement. You know, looking at the March on Washington, for example, that's a piece that I talk about. The March on Washington, 1963, historic march. Actually, there were early gay rights activists who attended that march, not to mention that the March on Washington was organized by an out African-American gay man, Bayard Rustin,
mm-hmm.
who is considered, you know, who is one of the architects of the and considered one of the most brilliant strategists of the civil rights movement. But there were also early gay activists who were at that march and who wrote in the history around this that it was that for a march, a gay march. And the first one happened, I believe, in 1978.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and seeing the power of African-Americans marching for their rights, demanding their rights, being visible, was a huge inspiration to the LGBT movement. You look at Stonewall, right? Stonewall,
right.
Which is considered the beginning of the modern LGBT rights movement. That was in, again, my years may be a little bit off, but I believe in 69. And that's when we saw, you know, we were in the midst, in the civil rights movement with civil disobedience. There was, you know, Rosa Parks who stood up and said, you know, I'm not going to take it anymore. And those were, you know, direct influences on the folks at Stonewall, the LGBT folks at Stonewall, to stand up against the police violence that they were experiencing and really spark the modern gay rights movement. So there are direct connections, you know, between these movements that, you know, that I really think show how the LGBT movement has been able to go faster.
Mm-hmm.
Than the civil rights movement.
You also made, and this may be very important too, 1967, Loving versus Virginia. Virginia prohibiting prohibiting laws invalidating interracial marriage, and mm-hmm. that was made mention of. Has been made mention of when we look at same-sex equality in marriage.
Absolutely. First off, Loving the. You know, the plaintiff in the case, she came out in support of gay marriage when this issue first started coming to the courts.
Really?
And yes, in the Supreme Court that got rid of DOMA, the Supreme Court case, the Loving case was cited. And in all the courts leading up to the Supreme Court, the Loving case was continually cited as, you know, a reason why why DOMA, Defense of Marriage Act, was unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm. You also made mention of the fact that, unlike the civil rights struggle, that people who are gay and lesbian are everywhere. You say we're visible and many in numbers, and that's part of a strategy because when you look at the civil rights movement, we were dealing with the issue of segregated communities, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, it's that visibility issue, right?
Right.
There's LGBT people, as I said previously, are everywhere. And it's about being visible and about coming out that is what gives power to a community. And obviously, being African American, you have no choice in that. But that visibility and taking charge of, you know, of your rights and saying, I stand up for this. That's a process. That's not easy to do when you have historically been oppressed. And I think that that's another similarity.
Yeah. Do you ever feel like you've had to spend too much of your life fighting the good fight on too many fronts?
Well, you know what I said? I think I said this at one point when I was, getting ready for the TED Talk. And I was like, wow, it seems like my rights have always been up to somebody else.
Mm.
You know, either mm-hmm. to rule on it, to vote on it. You know, the fact that, that we're even voting for people's rights is problematic. That's a whole nother conversation, but
right.
about our democracy, how our democracy works.
Right. So if you did this film now, and if you went back to some of those churches and talked to people who really had questions about same-sex marriage, what would you find? Do you think that attitudes have changed pretty significantly? And if you did the Maryland vote now, the numbers would be even higher than they were in favor of same-sex marriage?
I suspect they would. I obviously can't speak for everybody, but I do think minds are continually changing and evolving on this issue. The one direct time I've seen that happen is with a character in the film who is in a conversation. It's at that barbecue scene that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And he's in a conversation with a group of men, and he talks about how he, is worried about, the gay issue because of how it might affect his children. And, he's very resistant to understanding gay rights. And he actually, and he's a family member of Sharon, one of the main characters in the film. And he has come to, he came to a screening that we did in Maryland a few
months ago.
Oh,
he did? Oh.
Yes. And he got on stage with us and he talked about how his mind had been changed. And how, his evolution around the issue, it was quite amazing.
Huh. The president's mind was changed. How did that happen?
Yep. I mean, there are different sort of viewpoints about how that's happened in terms of, was it something that he didn't support, or was it a political thing? I think that it became, because the country was changing so fast, it wasn't smart for him not to come out in support. Especially when you look at generationally and where the support is coming from in terms of younger people and wanting that vote. Politically, it's not smart to not support marriage equality.
And would you like to comment at all on what's happening in the state of Wisconsin? It's interesting because people didn't know at first what to do with this. There was the ruling, and then Madison and Milwaukee, Dane and Milwaukee County, were allowing people to get married, and so many people got married. And then others were wondering, are we going to get an appeal here? Do we have to wait for more information? But before you know it, everybody's performing marriages all over the state of Wisconsin at these offices.
Wow.
Isn't it? It's
wow.
just remarkable.
Yes. And, the same sort of similar thing happened in Pennsylvania, where they bought the suit. They didn't know what was going to happen. They thought it might take a while. And it happened pretty immediately. And they said they can't, they won't stay it. So, I can't comment particularly on the intricacies of Wisconsin, but you also mentioned in your intro, this is happening in states where it was very surprising, Texas and Utah. So what I have read is that most likely this is going to come up, because it's happening state by state so quickly, this will come up to the Supreme Court, in the next Supreme Court review of cases.
You think it'll come up next fall?
That's what I read recently.
Really?
Yeah.
And it's hard to imagine they would rule any other way, isn't it? Because as a result of their last ruling, we're getting the rulings from courts that we're getting now.
Exactly. It is hard. I mean, I'm no legal strategist, but it seems, that would be very surprising if they ruled against it.
Yeah. So what about the issue of marriage? There are some in the film who talk about the fact that, you know, this is an issue, particularly in the African-American community, that this isn't our big issue. The big issue is jobs. It's income inequality, et cetera. Mm-hmm. It really isn't gay marriage. Is there a point that those people have? Does that?
Yeah, I think there is a point. I mean, I think there are other issues that people are dealing with on a day-to-day level that may be more that may affect them more than marriage equality. Especially when you look at the intersection of how race and sexuality play out, you know, economically in terms of jobs, in terms of, you know, homeless situation, in terms of AIDS, like all those things. But what I came to understand, or what I came to believe, is that marriage equality in some ways is kind of a metaphor for acceptance, and that it's a way in which people are using it to push the issue of acceptance of LGBT people. I mean, of course, there is the all the rights that go along with getting married, being able to get married, which, you know, are important. But I believe that, you know, that this is marriage equality is the opening to talk about LGBT equality in general.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is quite remarkable to see the number of people who are getting married. I mean, they get notice and down to that old courthouse in a matter of minutes, you know? Don't get dressed up. Don't worry about that. Let's just go get married.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, I mean, definitely. It is amazing. It is amazing.
We will welcome phone calls if you'd like to join our conversation. We're talking with the director of a film which will be on this Sunday on PBS, June 15. It's The New Black, and it's premiering on Independent Lens. Stanley Tucci will be hosting this, and our guest is a documentary filmmaker who directed this film, who's put together this film. She's done films all over this country and also abroad. The New Black premiered at the Los Angeles Film Festival in June and went on to win audience awards at the AFI Documentary and Philly Q-Fest and Frameline LGBT Film Festival, as well as a special jury mention at Frameline. It's playing at festivals all over the world. And as I said, will be on Sunday on PBS. So the main question of the hour is, why do you think that this whole movement is moving along faster than the civil rights movement did, which went on for a long, long period of time? But here we are, and she focuses on Maryland and fight for marriage equality in Maryland that came to a vote, and the people in Maryland voted for marriage equality. Why do you think that we're getting state after state that's saying yes to this, or the courts are saying yes to this? It's all happening fairly rapidly. Is it because people have learned from the civil rights movement? Is it because people are early gay activists, were inspired by those people? Is it because there is a difference in terms of LGBT being integrated everywhere and segregation being more of a problem, certainly with the civil rights movement? How far are we from state by state finding ourselves in a country where the last vestiges of prejudice will fade and we will live in an environment where we think, well, everybody's created equal? What do you think? 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. To your phone calls momentarily. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls for our guest, Brian in Green Bay, first caller for you. Hi, Brian.
Hi there, Kathleen.
Hi.
Question, I understand that in this interview you all are coming from the perspective, it sounds like you're pretty much celebrating the change in laws and change in the nation, and I'm sure you understand, and apparently from the guest's work, that there are those who hold a different opinion. So my question is it your goal, when we speak of this goal of acceptance culturally, is it your goal that every church in the nation capitulate and acknowledge same-sex marriage? Is that your goal, if they go against their current convictions that are based on their belief in a particular view of Scripture and doctrine, would that be an ultimate goal in this movement that you're speaking of?
All right, Brian.
So the film documents people on different sides of this issue, Brian. And really, I think it's important when you're looking at the issue of marriage equality, the right to get married, it's important to remember that marriage is a civil act. Marriage happens, you know, you get your marriage license from the courthouse. So like in Maryland, for example, the bill actually explicitly said that churches, you know, it doesn't force churches to do anything. So from a legal standpoint, marriage equality is from the civil point, is from the civil sector. And, you know, I think in terms of churches, acceptance or non-acceptance of marriage equality, that happens, you know, in different communities in different ways. And I would say, I mean, I'm a filmmaker. I'm not an activist in the movement, but I would say that that's not the goal. I mean, that's not the sort of political goal. It may be a personal goal if someone is part of a church and they want them to accept them or want to be married, you know, in that church. But this is really a civil fight.
Anything else, Brian?
Well, I just think that, you know, you speak of marriage as something that's a civil situation, but it's also cultural, and those two things intersect. And it's inevitable that these things will affect churches, and they will face it. And as I heard someone recently, actually they wrote that you know, churches will have choices to make, and the reasoning of a lot of Christians, I can speak from the Christian community, there is no third way. Either that we believe what the Scriptures define as marriage, or we reject it, which, you know, you use the word prejudice, Kathleen, and I think that it's sad that it's come to this, that even in your conversation, it sounds like that there's really no other voice other than what you determined to be, whether you want to define it as bigotry, to believe that a marriage should be between two people that are of, you know, opposite sex. If there's something that you would believe to be, you know, exclusive about that, then you are prejudiced. And I think that, that kind of conversation is telling about your perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be quite upfront about it. My perspective is that it very much is a civil rights issue, and that, and I see Yoruba's point on this, that it is a... it's a civil act, and so if you're going to afford marriages to heterosexual people, then you afford them to people who are homosexual you know, it doesn't make any difference. They're people. That people don't choose what they are. And I know there's a whole religious element, but when the government comes into it, that it's discriminatory to not issue marriage licenses to gay people and to straight people. I think we're reaching a point where that's not going to be controversial, except there will be some religions, even though, and I'm sure you'll have information on this, Yoruba, that there are a lot of denominations who have changed their thoughts on this issue as well.
Absolutely.
It's an evolving issue in churches as well. But I very much see it as a civil rights issue, and I make no apologies for that whatsoever. It's a civil rights issue, I think.
Mm.
Yeah. But, you know, do you think that we need to look at it separately? Because we hear this frequently, that it becomes a religious issue, too. And what
right.
about people who believe a certain way? What about the people in the
right.
churches that you did this documentary on? What?
Right. I mean, I encourage, you know, Brad and other folks, you know, who may not be, you know, who may not support marriage equality to watch the film, because I really did make an effort to tell both sides of this story and to, you know, not demonize.
You did.
To not demonize, you know, the folks in the church who were against marriage equality. I think it's important to understand where we're coming from as a people, you know, human being wise.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but I do think that the you know, that it is a civil issue, that we have separation of church and state, as we know, and this is a civil issue. I can't, I mean, and it's the same when if I look at it racially, you know, I can't make somebody accept me as like me as a black person, but they certainly have to give me my rights. They certainly can't deny my rights. And that's where the fight has to be. I mean, the hearts and mind change of individuals, that's a longer, more complicated thing.
Right.
And I think that, you know, changing in churches, right, what are the different ways that, you know, that this is being debated in church or understood in different churches or many different churches, you know, with varying opinions on the issue. So I wouldn't say the goal is that, you know, that every church supports marriage equality. The goal is that we have our civil rights.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for the call, Brian. Jonna in Oconomowoc. Hi.
Hi. The point I wanted to make is about how rapid the acceptance has grown. And I think that's because they're already assimilated into our lives. They look like us. They're in our families. Mm-hmm. They're in our churches, our neighborhoods. And I think that's made the acceptance much easier than when people look different and don't live near us and we don't really understand them as much.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think that's a really good point. And they're in our families. You know, these are our family members. So I think that that's a huge difference. And I mentioned that in the talk as well. I think that's a very important, point.
Thank you, Jonna, for your call. Rich in Rhinelander. Hi, Rich.
Hi, Kathleen. Hi, guest. I'm wondering if the author could talk a little bit about the fear factor, because it seems to me that so much of the arguments regarding gay marriage have revolved around a sense of loss, as though gay people getting married in some way or another would cause some kind of negative effect on straight marriage. And I think, speaking for myself, I generally fear what is not like me, and I mean that in terms of racially and socioeconomically and in terms of ability rights and so on and so forth, and that it seems the new generation coming up is setting aside the idea of fear of the other. They really don't believe that if someone lives next to them or attends their schools or whatever, that they are somehow less because the other person is different from them. And I wonder if the author thinks we're making progress in that regard, slowly and with a great deal of effort, but her feelings about that.
Yeah, I mean, fear, that's a real sort of deep thing, right? Like, that's something that is probably has been with us as human beings since we were came on this planet. I think what I will say, though, is I think that fear can be exploited by you know, politicians and people who are, you know, trying to stop marriage equality or other civil rights, you know, civil rights legislation. And so I think that fear is exploited. But I actually think that once we get to know people of different races, of different sexualities, different socioeconomic backgrounds, you find so many times that those people's minds are, or that fear, you know, is dissipates because you actually get to know people as a human being. I mean, ultimately, you know, I'm a humanist. I believe we are all on this planet together. And if we don't find a way to make it work, you know, we're going to, you know, it's not going to be good for us as a people. So I'm a big advocate of, you know, you get to know you get to know the thing that you fear. And ultimately that will enrich you and it will enrich society.
And thank you very much, Rich, for the call. I'm going to go back to, we have a ton of calls. We'll go back to them in just one moment, but whoa. Don't know what happened there. Hello?
I'm here. Can you
hear me? Okay. Yeah. It was just a really loud noise. Let's go back to Proposition 8 for just a moment. Was the criticism that African Americans were blamed for the passage of Proposition 8 at all justified? Were they?
So there was a an exit poll that came out right after the election that said that blacks had voted for it by 70%. That turned out to be incorrect, that exit poll, but it is something that is even still perpetuated to this day.
Hmm.
Turns out that African Americans voted for it in the same, the majority voted for it, but voted for it in the same numbers as, you know, other groups. Something like, I think it's like 54% or something. So yes, African Americans did vote for it. You know, majority did, but you also have to look at other factors that were going on in that election. And we haven't touched on this, but one of the critiques of the organizing around that is that the white LGBT, sort of the white-led LGBT groups, didn't really do their work within the African-American community and the religious community of all races and communities of color in general. And that there was just this thought that, oh, if we say it's a civil rights movement, you know, these folks will vote for it. And there wasn't the real work that needed to be done to create alliances and why, you know, African Americans should come out and vote, you know, against Proposition 8.
Mm.
There was confusion within the bill. There is also that. California is notorious for confusing, so people don't actually know what they're voting for, because to vote yes for Proposition 8
right.
meant voting no for marriage equality.
Yeah.
So Maryland learned a lot of those lessons in terms of clarification of the bill, in terms of working with the African American community. As you said, Maryland black electorate is 30%, so that they had to. You know, they were going to be a key voting factor. Churches are very big. Black churches are very big in Maryland. So they had to work with the religious community. So I think they actually learned a lot from, you know, what went wrong in the Proposition 8 campaign.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Jerry in Milwaukee. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, how are you? Kathleen, thank you for the show.
Sure.
No, I'm going to be quick. You know, I'm a straight male, but referring to the gentleman who called about the religious aspect of it, if you substitute gay for black, you know, 200 years ago, blacks were not part of the Christian genetics in the church. It still goes on today. So again, you know, the church has evolved somewhat, but there's still racism in church. Sunday morning is still the most segregated morning in America when it comes to religious worship. And I really believe that over time, you know, it's going to be accepted. Gay marriage will be just some normal thing, despite the religious aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
Religious people will have to come about and accept it, just like they accept me, all right, as a member of the, as a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering what the author had to say about that. And by the way, one last thing. I used to live in the Village in New York, and my big problem with that the whole movement is the segregation within the movement. I could never understand that. White and black segregation in the community.
Mm-hmm.
That's my word.
All right. Thank you, Jerry. Yoruba, we're almost out of time.
Yeah. So, yes, there's racism still everywhere, right? And so that's why I said the civil rights movement, as we all know, is not complete. So there's still work, you know, that we're trying to do within churches, within our communities around the issue of race. And, you know, hopefully one day it will be obsolete, just like homophobia will be too. And, you know, again, that's my opinion, our opinion. And yes, there's still racism within the LGBT movement. A lot of, you know, there's definitely been a feeling from communities of color that are LGBT that there hasn't been an understanding of that intersection between race and sexuality. And that's also what my movie, you know, what I really try to show in the film.
And the film is this Sunday. Yoruba, thank you so much for being with us.
And thank you. This is my pleasure.
Thanks. And what a fascinating film it is. Yoruba Richin, our guest, documentary filmmaker, The New Black, will be on Frontline or on PBS Independent Lens on June 15 at 10:30 Eastern Time. Check your local listings. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this hour. I got so involved in the last hour, I forgot to thank Judith Sears-Poisson for doing the World War II Normandy show, which was so moving. I just got wrapped up in the show. Thank you, Judith, and thanks, KP. Thanks to KP for on-air production in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. Great conversations ahead.